Okay, should I share my slides?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, can you see my slides?
Yeah, we can.
Okay, should we get started?
Yeah, you can
Okay.
start.
Yeah, so this is lessons learned from using Samba in IBM Spectrum Scale. So this is kind of a tie-in to the previous presentation from Ingo, where he kind of outlined more the customer requirements and features we are looking at. And I'm trying to take the view, okay, we are taking Samba as an open source component integrated in a product. What does this mean from a developer point of view? What are the issues we ran into and what could we learn from it, which would then also apply to, or could also apply to other users of Samba, hopefully. This is like the high level flow through the chart. It's, what does it mean that we are integrating Samba in our product? What are some issues that we faced? And yeah, then as a summary, what can we learn from the work being done? And this is the abstract. About me, I'm a currently senior software engineer employed by IBM. I am working on integrating Samba in IBM Spectrum Scale. So I'm working in the same team as Ingo. I'm also kind of spending quite some time with customer support, which is also helpful to kind of then learn actual problems customer face, use cases, and then tie that back into further development. Due to this work, I've also become a member of the Samba team and push that we contribute fixes back to open source to make ours and everybody's lives easier. Previously, I was also involved in Samba integration support for other products and also some Linux device driver work, which is also interesting background here. Okay, so we are integrating Samba in IBM Spectrum Scale. What does that mean? And this might be a bit of an overlap with the previous presentation, but as I think it would not hurt here for completeness. Okay, so Spectrum Scale is a clustered file system. Just think it's, you have a collection of machines running, mostly running Linux these days, and you just have a file system that's accessible the same way on all the nodes with high performance and high availability. And then we have clustered Samba, which we can install on these nodes, which just to present one SMB server, but this is access, which is accessible through multiple nodes. The idea being, if we need to be, if we need to scale out, we add more nodes. If one node has a problem or needs to be taken down for maintenance, everything else is still available and access can continue. Where it gets interesting, well, we are tasked with supporting multiple hardware architectures, so the standard x86, but then also Power and also the Linux is coming up again and again. And these are just the terms that the Linux typically uses. On top of that, we are tasked with, since we are just like a product to install on top of an existing system, we are also being tasked with supporting multiple Linux distributions. So that being the Red Hat Enterprise Linux, the Linux Enterprise Server, and Ubuntu are the ones that are requested these days in for our enterprise customers. The whole product I'm not going to talk about. There is many more features. I mean, NFS access and remote clusters, encryption, all sorts of things, but the focus here is obviously what do we do for Samba and SMB integration. This is kind of a summary chart from other products, or just saying, well, we do have the core of that whole product is really the clustered file system. And then one way to see it, that we provide different access methods. So you can just do POSIX access for your Hadoop analytics object, but yeah, as I said, we focus, we are focusing on SMB, but that's not the only purpose of the product. It's just one feature we do provide by using Samba. Diving down a bit more to the technical side, Spectrum Scale, or well, the former name GPFS, is basically a POSIX file system, so with inodes and the typical Linux metadata, but it has some extensions to accommodate SMB and Windows clients. So one part is that there's additional metadata storage for the DOS attributes, so read, write, hit, and read-only hidden system archive. Sparse, I think, is another one we use. There is the ability to store the create time. I think other file systems call it birth time these days, but we had the create time for a long time. The file system does support NFS v4 ACLs, which will come up in some examples later on. The nice thing here is that this mostly maps to the ACLs, or what you call security descriptors, being used in SMB and Windows clients. So that makes our lives a bit easier, but it also has its own challenges. SMB and Windows have this notion of share modes, meaning that someone can basically lock the file while it's open. So someone can open a file and saying, okay, while I have this file open, nobody else should have read or write access. And Samba enforces that as part of the SMB file server, but we also have support for this inside the file system. So if someone opens a file, we can also say, okay, nobody else at this point should have read or write access, and to provide data integrity. And we actually have use cases where this is being used. We do have a cluster file system, so we also need all of these features also need to be available across all the nodes in the cluster, not just on one. So the Linux kernel provides this feature, what they call leases, which is basically a way to support SMB oblocks, and our file system also has a support for, they call it GPFS leases, if you look at the API call, but it's basically the same. It's a way that we can support oblocks so that the SMB server can allow client to cache data. And if anybody touches that file, then the mechanism is that we can send out signals and notifications to revoke this permission. For reasons I don't want to discuss here, just to clarify, this is currently to support the old oblocks, and it does not work for SMB2 leases. That would be a separate discussion. So we do have like all these extensions that the file system provides, and now we need to hook those into Samba. And this is being done through the VFS GPFS module that basically hooks into calls Samba does internally. So it hooks into that Samba VFS extension API, and then for the most part turns around and issues the corresponding call to the GPFS API. And it could be a bit cleaner, and I'll also mention that a bit later. So we decided to use Samba, and just trying to outline roughly what are we going to do, and what are we going to do when adding Samba to a product. So what we typically do is that say, okay, look at our release schedule, look at available time and resources, and then see what is the stable upstream release of Samba that we want to use. So we learned over time that picking the very latest release might still have a few rough edges. So in the recent past, we had good experience just going with the stable upstream release. The next step, we'll just strip out any code that we obviously will not use. So we are running a SMB file server. We will join Active Directory as a member. We might use some other authentication mechanism, but we will, as part of this product, we will never run Samba as an Active Directory domain controller. So just to avoid any discussions, or in case a security issue comes out touching the code, we can say, no, you know, we are not even compiling or shipping that code. That does not affect us. Ideally, we would not add additional patches, but we do, also coming up in a bit. In a perfect world, we would only pick back bots from upstream fixes. So customer runs into a problem that is only fixed in the latest master, we would just cherry pick that patch and put it back into our stream, and we add more. But that's kind of the ideal view that we would always kind of stay away from private changes. Okay, and now that we have the code complete, obviously we need to add the config. We want to configure Samba as a clustered Samba. So that's a very brief example of what we need to add. We always need to say we want clustering. We want to put the GPFS module into the VFS object, which also then requires file ID to do the clustering write. We use shadow copy 2 to provide snapshot access, syncops to be able to provide better guarantees when data is synced to disk, and time audit is useful for troubleshooting. And yeah, and then just, well, add packaging scripts on top. Our goal is to put everything Samba related in one package for our product, which just makes upgrades and managing things a bit easier. We also learned over time that it's important that we stay away from the Linux directory tree as much as possible. So there's like a private directory where all the product data lives anyway, and we push as much as possible of Samba over there just to avoid stepping on other Samba-related libraries that might already be present on the system. And then, obviously, testing. Do the features work? Do we get the performance we do expect? Can we scale out to the numbers we claim that are usable? And that was just for the Samba and for the Samba code integration aspect and what we need to do there. Obviously, to make a working product, we need more. I mean, there is what you can call service management, which is when do we start and stop services, and which is also then integrated with other parts of the product. There's a command line interface and the graphical user interface. What we do here for Samba is that we say, well, the SMB conf main page has so many options, we cannot feasibly test and support all of these. So what our view is that we support a subset of the Samba options. These can be changed through the official product user interfaces, and we only test and support these. Others might work, but they are out of the scope of the product support. And customers, well, install a product as root, they have obviously can find the config and modify it, but that's kind of the line we are drawing here. It's only supported what is in the CLI. To make clustering work, we have a mechanism for floating IP addresses. So basically all nodes running Samba have those floating or virtual IP addresses that can be configured. And the idea is SMB is only accessed through these floating IP addresses. So if one node needs to be taken down or has a problem, then these are moved to a node that is remaining that will keep serving SMB. So clients always have the ability to connect to a running SMB server. So that's one of the promises here with running a cluster file server. We are not using the CDB public IP addresses. The main reason here is a decision was made that this should work independent of SMB. Even if a customer does not run SMB, it should still work and be independent of the Samba code. So some might argue whether that's a good idea or not to implement this again, but this is how it's done today. There's integrations with performance monitoring, so we pull latency measurements, counters out of Samba and feed that into the product. And okay, we also have mechanisms to collect traces and logs for troubleshooting. So, which is also an important aspect that that should not be overlooked. So the question is, what if a customer deploys a product, hits a problem, what do we do? So we do need a way to capture data that will help us troubleshoot. So we have a mechanism to capture all the logs and codefix on all the nodes and upload them. Sometimes for Samba, we need more detailed traces. And what we found really helpful over time, if there's a mechanism to collect the level 10 trace of the Samba component, get a network trace, which just a TCP dump of a client connecting to a Samba node. And sometimes it's helpful to see the system calls that the SMB server actually issues to the file system. And what we do to help us here, there is a separate CLI command that basically wraps these. I mean, Samba level 10 trace, you put a modified config in place, network trace, you run a TCP dump, system calls, you run an S trace. It's really helpful to have that integrated. Just give your support team, give the customer one, run this command, recreate your problem, stop the trace, and then you have the data that we want to look at. And if you want to say it here, the lessons learned here, it's that data capture needs to be 100% reliable, because if you have a customer who is already very impatient because there's a problem on his systems, you really do not want to troubleshoot your data capture at the same time while trying to troubleshoot another problem. So it really is worthwhile to pay attention here to make this work without problems. Going back to Samba, so we have Samba upstream development, our product development, and ideally we would just go through this cycle so that at some point there would be an upstream Samba release that we would then decide to integrate in the product, test this, deploy this with our customers. If there's a problem, develop fixes, feed those back into upstream development where we run through the upstream CI, continuous integration, and then when it's time for release upgrades, we can go through the cycle again. And for the most part, we follow this, and yeah, there's always room for improvement. That being said, we obviously run into problems, we run into issues. So I'm highlighting here some of the issues we faced and then things that we learned what need to improve in this area. So the first one, which is kind of almost silly, it's a very simple example. So we do have this BFS GPFS module, which has also been part of the Samba upstream code for very, very, very long time. But it was not part of the build for a long time, because main reason is it issues call to the GPFS API, so it needs to be built with a header file for the GPFS API. And what happened over time is, well, Samba code changes. The Samba team decide we need to change the BFS API. There is a module that is not built by default. So what happens is the build breaks, and then later you realize it doesn't even build anymore. You have to fix it, which is kind of annoying. In this case, the way we dynamically load a library, we only, as a build dependency, we only need one header file, and the license in that says you can redistribute that header file. So the solution here was pretty simple. I added the header file under the third-party directory in the Samba code, and now it's built by default. So if anybody changes the Samba internal BFS, at least the person is forced to also adjust this module at the same time. So here, I mean, one doesn't learn. Even just a simple thing of building code can prevent breakage and avoid some additional work. We still need to do more testing, but it's like the first mini step that we take here. Another issue we faced here, which was kind of very illustrative why testing is very important, we got a requirement to support Ubuntu build. And which should not be a big problem. Looking, well, what, how does the system look like? They ship both, there's two Kerberos libraries, and they ship both, MIT and Heimdall. And then looking closer, open LDAP libraries on the on this library, they use the Heimdall Kerberos library. And well, in Samba, we Samba uses then open LDAP client libraries for some LDAP integration. And yeah, so looking at this and talking with our development team, said, well, we really do not want to end up with a Samba process that pulls in the MIT Kerberos library through one set of dependencies and the Heimdall Kerberos library through one set of dependencies. And in the end, we do not know which Kerberos library is actually being used, and we might have a hard time troubleshooting this issue. So looking at this environment, the solution seems simple. Okay, then on Ubuntu, we compile Samba using the Heimdall Kerberos library. And here comes the first problem. When we first attempted this, we discovered that the build was broken since, I think it worked before, but with Samba 4.8, it did not work anymore, and nobody has noticed. So we fixed this for Samba 4.9. The previous approach required a very long list of libraries to use system libraries in the configure line, so just made it easier to also add a new configure switch to say you actually want to use the system Heimdall to make this a bit easier. And well, we thought, okay, we are done, let's move on. And as it happens, then it was also the time when Samba finally updated the internal WAF build system, which then broke again the build with the system Heimdall library, and there was no test. So we only noticed this when we decided to pull in Samba 4.11 and saw that the build broke yet again, and we had to fix it again. But luckily this time the efforts to use the GitHub CLI and use different build environments as part of the upstream CI already advanced. So we were able to finally add a build in the upstream CI that also builds with the system Heimdall. So hopefully this will never break again, since it's now covered with every upstream CI run. So the important lesson here is even a simple thing like a build needs to be pushed into the upstream CI, otherwise you risk breakage for some reason that you don't expect. Another example we faced, so in our product, we do join Active Directory, we do use WinBind, and we face this whole ID mapping issue. We've decided to use the ID map autorit module as default, so if nothing else is configured, we use this, which uses an internal database to generate IDs. If a domain does not have something else configured, it's also the automatic fallback, and it also provides mappings for built-in and some well-known SIDs. So it, and once that's configured, it's basically you just know it's there, you can rely on it. And it also has this newer approach that every time we need to map a user or a group, it provides both a UID and a GID. And internally, this flag ID map type both for these. And the nice thing, this allows this corner case that SMB and Windows allow, that you can actually make a group the owner of a file. And we actually have customers that have existing data on other SMB files of us migrated over, and so this helps that they kind of keep the same semantics or the same ownership on the data. And as I mentioned earlier, we are not only an SMB file server, but we also provide other access methods. For instance, you can just log on to one of those Linux nodes and issue POSIX command, so ls-l. So, which internally ls-l will then see the UIDs and GIDs that that are the owners of the file, and then call getpwid. So just then ask the system, well, given this UID I just found, what's the name, so I can display a name, or I can display a name to the user. And as it is, this worked for some Samba releases. I think it might have even been added in Samba 4.5 and broke with Samba 4.6 due to some code changes that did not consider this behavior. And again, we need to fix this and add a test upstream so that it keeps working. So some might consider this is really a corner case. How many people do have files owned by groups and then want this ID to name translation to work? And the answer is, well, some customers actually want to use it that way. So even if it's a corner case, if we know of it, well, we need to provide. We need to push a test in upstream CI, otherwise we just have to play catch up again and again. We do use, so our file system supports NFS v4 ACLs, and they are very close to SMB security descriptors. I mean, most of those flags, you can just map between those. Obviously, we still need to do identity mapping. So Active Directory has to sit, then we need to find the UID and GID. And there's also one thing that has been added in NFS before ACLs to kind of be compatible to POSIX. There can not only be names for a specific user, specific group, there can also be those special owner, special group, and special everyone entries. Which just mean, well, if there's one of these entries, the permissions apply to the permissions on the file, and they also are used to then represent the mode bits. So if special owner has read permission, then if you do an ls-l, you see that the owner has a read permission, for instance. And in Samba, we have code to map from security descriptors to NFS4 ACLs. And those special entries are one source of complexity in there. When should we map to special? When should we map to a named entry? And I think that we even passed in Samba XP presentation talking about that in a bit more details. So in this case, we had a request to add, to have an owner entry. So owner of a file has permissions on the file, and the customer said, well, it would be nice if you would map those to special user, even when I'm using ID map type both. So then if I do an ls-l, then I see the mode bits if the owner has read, write, or execute permissions. So reasonably enough, and naively I thought I'll just change that. And then later came out that this case, this broke the case where a file is owned by a group. So where is this fake UID that emulates group ownership? And again, why did this get unnoticed? And because, well, there should already be test cases in upstream for this. So then the answer is, well, upstream has tests that map descriptors to those NFS4 ACLs, and since not many file systems do support them, they are just stored in extended attributes for the purpose of the test. But so far, there was no test to validate that how the mapping between security descriptors and the NFS4 ACLs actually should look like. It was just, well, as long as the actual permissions work, the old test didn't care what was actually mapped and stored. So, and since I already ran into a problem here once, I didn't just fix another problem and not knowing what else might break here. So, and another question that comes in, well, NFS4 ACLs are not the mainstream Samba. They are more like the corner case on the side. So GPFS supports them. There's file systems on AIX supporting them. And as far as I can see, ZFS on FreeBSD. So it's not widely used, so we really need to make sure that we have tests in place to not break our cases, because other people might not notice that quickly. So on a high level, this is how the mapping in Samba looks. So we map from a security descriptor to like a generic representation inside Samba of the NFS4 ACLs, and then code that has knowledge of the file system details then maps that to a file system NFS4 ACL, which is reasonable enough. So looking at this, we can very easily add a unit test to validate the mapping between a secure descriptor and the NFS3.4 ACLs. So quite some work went into that just to cover existing code with unit tests to make sure if we add more changes on top, at least the existing mappings do not change. And then we finally had a foundation to apply the fix on. And what's still missing and what might happen in the future, we still don't have a unit test for mapping from NFS4 ACLs to the file system NFS4 ACLs. But if we would separate out the mapping code, I think that would be doable to at least cover the mapping without the issuing the actual API calls, which would also be a small step forward. There's still the question how to do end-to-end testing. So for instance, SMB access through Samba all the way to the Spectrum scale file system, and that would still require the environment that is exactly set up with this file system, because I don't see that we would pull in specialized file systems in upstream CI. It just won't happen. So we need to make do with what we can actually add there. And I think the lesson learned here is, well, we cannot do end-to-end testing, I mean, unit tests can really be a useful step to fill test gaps that do exist. I think that might be the last example I have in my slides here. We also support SMB encrypted SMB connections as part of our product, which is a really nice feature, because you just have to flip a switch and that you want the connection to be encrypted and everything else happens under the hood. And there was also the desire to have this accelerated use in modern CPUs, have assembler instructions that accelerate AES and some related crypto operations. Unfortunately, I would say this came up during the Samba 4.3 time, and there was nothing available upstream to accelerate hardware encryption, at least not on the architectures we need to support, because at this time the discussion was we need this for x86 and we need this for power. And the solution at this time was, well, we really want to add this, so we changed the Samba code for our product build, so that became part of the patches we add later on, to use the AES functions from OpenSSL, because OpenSSL is a major library that supports instructions on these platforms. And we tested it and thought we were done. But actually, we tested it on x86. And only to see an issue later on that enabling SMB encryption with our product stack on power then suddenly resulted in high CPU usage, which shouldn't be the case since we use OpenSSL. And apparently, there is a case in OpenSSL that if we just ask for crypto functions and not for TLS or SSL, then OpenSSL does not really ask for all the CPU capabilities on power and just does the software fallback. Yeah, so OpenSSL is being used. I mean, you can see that in perf or other ways to monitor the systems, but it does not use the CPU acceleration, which is kind of not the point here. And yes, it can be worked around, so you can just tell OpenSSL it shouldn't be necessary, but you can just tell it initialize everything just to be safe, and that queries the CPU capabilities and does the right thing at the end. So the real challenge here was that we needed to establish automated tests to decide is the CPU hardware acceleration actually being used or not? And one approximation that seems to work reasonably well is to measure the CPU time spent in an SMBD process and then just compare it to some numbers to see if it's too high, then there might be a problem and we need to take a look again. So measuring the CPU time on power during an encryption test, I mean, that's really one certain aspect, but we really needed to implement an automated test here. Otherwise, this would have escaped and we would have to debug the same issues only on customer systems. And yeah, to further complicate it and tie it into the lessons learned in a bit, Samba 4.12 upstream now uses qTLS for its crypto, which is a good thing. But for our case, there is no support for power systems yet. And yeah, that's an open issue. We hope it will be addressed at some point, and then it needs to wait for it to trickle down to the distros. And yeah, so for the time being, we need to keep using our private OpenSSL integration to cover the cases we need to support. And so the other lesson learned here is deviating from upstream code that can really cause a burden on maintenance, because we keep this, even though there is a different solution available upstream, it does not quite fit yet. So we have to wait until those issues are resolved. I'll skip the thread limit example here for the time being and briefly talk about the quota issue. So SMB has the mechanism to that when an SMB user asks for available free space, then this also includes any quotas that are being set. And for some reason, quotas in our file system had some different features, so we implemented this logic in our private module, which seemed reasonable at that time because it wasn't quite a fit for the common code that implements a similar path. So then we had to add a special feature that quotas with, or the directory with SGID carry some different expectations, and we needed to add an additional check. So we had to add it twice. One time for the common code, and which could also be tested upstream, and one for our private code. So the point here is that while we really need to avoid code duplication, which we also kind of something we did, because now we have to fix issues twice. And ideally, we would get to the point that our module would only issue API calls and thus the minimum mapping, and that might be a long-term goal. So lessons learned. I think these are quite illustrative examples, and so what can be learned? So one thing is we need to ensure that every aspect is covered in automated testing or product testing. Otherwise, it's not sustainable for us. Also, we need to make sure that here for the Samba case, we need to push as much of the testing also into the upstream CI. Otherwise, something breaks upstream, we notice a year later and then have to play catch up as well. Also, we need to pay special attention to the features that are not mainly used in Samba. So NFS V4, ACLs, all the file system integration, which is really useful for us, but yeah, is not used much else. So that really needs additional test coverage attention. We also try to stay reasonably current with upstream releases just to make it easier. If there's a fix for another issue, we can just backport it without too much hassle and makes handling security issues much easier. And also kind of to tie into the same thing, we need to fix any issues also upstream, because whatever we carry internally is a burden and having that list grow is not sustainable. And in the worst case, it would block updates to new Samba releases. And yeah, stay away from private code changes. We have examples. Here was one example of those, and it really carries additional burden on maintenance. And we test stress testing every aspect. And yeah, overall, it is reliable. I mean, I pointed out problems, but Cluster Tumbler is a very reliable system. There are limitations. Ingo pointed out some of them. And if possible, participate in upstream development. If there's common code, it will be used more. There are some things we should do more in our integration module. I'll just talk briefly, remove duplicated code, at least do unit testing, and some code should be cleaned up. Yeah, the legal disclaimer. Questions, at least we have a few minutes left for these. I think one question, first question here was Andreas Berger. Is the VFS read-only supported? For read-only via Samba and read-write via NFS situation? The official answer for our product is it's not supported. I mean, if it's there, someone could configure it, and we would say it's up to the customer to use it, but we do not support it as part of the product. There is another file system feature that does, that's called immutability, and that's something that we do support. And we could discuss adding VFS read-only as an additional feature if there's demand, but we would have to sign off with product management. You, Albert, as you mentioned, the floating IP is used. How many floating IPs do you have? Can all the Samba nodes in the cluster be active at the same time? So in our product, it's up to the customer to configure floating IP addresses. I think the usual approach is to consider the common case. For instance, we have 5 nodes, and all the Samba nodes can be active at the same time. So you could say, okay, I have 5 nodes. I want even distribution. So you want to cover, maybe it's a bad example, 5 IP addresses, and then I also want to take one node down and maybe even have even coverage. So then you might also want to add more IP addresses. But it's up to the customer. But you need at least one floating IP address per node that is supposed to be active. Maybe that's one way to say it. And you can have more, and some customers have more for virtual networks, which then have different IP addresses on different interfaces, and they can float as well. Are there any other questions? I think we have like 2 minutes left. If not, well, thank you for listening to this presentation. And if there are any other questions, just reach out. I also added my email addresses to the slide. So thanks, everybody.
Thank you very much for your talk. We now go into a 15-minute break. After that, we will continue in track 1.